absolutely wild as Vern Gagne's all-star wrestling goes coast to coast and continent to continent. The greatest wrestlers in the world.
He may be an apprentice carpenter, but I guarantee you he is a seasoned ring veteran.
I've been hit with bar stools, bar rags, bar maids.
I'm talking to you!
They're scared that Hulkamania is still running wild.
Oh, yeah.
I got a big fat wife and 9 kids at home, and I gotta feed them.
And take a look at Jesse the Body in real life.
Open your hand once if you would.
You want to see it?
This is absolutely unbelievable. Totally, completely out of control. He's coming in over the top. Hey, look out!
That's right. Hey, look out, because it is the preeminent number one podcast dedicated to the American Wrestling Association and the stories in and around and about. My name is Chris Tubbs. I am the preeminent something. I wouldn't say host, but I'm a part of it. That's Brandon. Mick Karch, he's a preeminent something. And Joe is the preeminentest of the preeminent somethings. I don't know what that is, guys, but good morning to you.
Nobody does, and that's the magic of this program. Nobody can figure out what anything is, and we like it that way. Magic, then they're not on to us.
Magic and this program somehow or another shouldn't be said in the same sentence, but we're here anyway. And despite all of the BS of that, I can't wait for this show.
Oh, it's going to be a good one.
How you feeling, Joe? You're sounding like you're a little bit better.
Getting better. I'm in the mid-90 range of getting back to 100%. So thanks.
I'm going to say, you don't look like you're a day over mid-70%. So good for you. Oh, you're talking about percentage. I thought, never mind. I don't listen to what you say. So
excuse
I
me.
Just kind of have Achoo. To.
Oh, God.
Yeah, we've got a good one here, guys. We got a special guest that I know you guys are gonna love this. This is gonna have some fun stories galore. But first, we got to take care of, as the kids say, business, if you will. Did I say that right?
Close
businesses.
I don't want you to get you'll start swallowing your tongue and everything else there if you keep doing it. So
that's true.
Yeah, you did well.
Kayfabe is dead. Kayfabe is DZ. Hey, first of all, want to thank everybody for signing up to be members. If you are not a paying member, we highly, highly recommend that you do. We've got some really fun things that we've got planned. Here's kind of what I'm talking about. For those that are into the extra content, if you will, the reason we do this is because the more that you guys subscribe and sign up, the more content we can create. Very simple. I know that you guys want a lot, and we want to continue to provide that to you. But again, here's what you get with the Body Slam. You get the podcast a day early. You get the monthly live chats and the personalized letter. The Pinfall, I think that's really what you guys want, because you get the podcast a day early. You get the monthly video. You get the video watch along. You get the live chat. You get the letter. Plus, you get a 5-picture pack from Mick. So I highly recommend those. I know that everybody that's had it so far, guys, everybody's loved it. Everybody's loved what they've gotten from the Pinfall level.
Chris and Joe, we have to emphasize, and we've said this so many times, if we don't do this, pretty soon the history of the AWA is going to be lost. It's that mm-hmm. simple. The AWA has not been in business for 33 years or so. And there's only a handful of the guys left from the 1960s that worked in the AWA. And pretty soon it's not going to be talked about. Well, you know what? As long as we're here, it's going to be talked about. And the more content we can provide, the better we like it, the better you like it.
Yeah, not only are we the preeminent, but if I'm not mistaken, I believe we are the only podcast directly talking about the AWA.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and like you said, Mick, the stories, it's about the stories. It's about the memories. It's about the nostalgia. That's what I tell people. This is about the nostalgia. This is about bringing back those fun memories for people that experienced it, or for people like me that haven't. but that are so fascinated by it and that want to learn. And I feel like we're doing a really good job of hopefully entertaining and informing people. But at the same time, if you want more, we can continue to give you more. But if you can sign up to be a member of the pinfall level, that allows us to do even more. So yeah, if you wouldn't mind. And then as well, as you can see that I am drinking out of my Slick Mick Guy cup, you can go to TeePublic. That is our website. I'm going to put the TeePublic, I'm going to put that link up here, guys. And if you want, right there, we've got T-shirts, we've got sweatshirts, we've got phone cases, we've got mugs, we've got stickers, we've got mouse pads, anything you want to go ahead and rep the brand. And we had someone that rep the brand, as a matter of fact, over the weekend. We're going to give them a nice shout out. I know Joe's got him squarely in his crosshairs for good reason. So if you want it, go get it. That also helps support your favorite three podcasters, or at least the favorite three podcasters that have been in a big part of the show.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah. No, there was a three, four. Yeah. I think three. I thought it was four for a minute, but no, it's only three.
It's three. Yeah. I'm in radio. It's three.
There we go. There we go. Kelly.
Okay. Let's get to the good stuff here, guys. You know, we have all at times said, and if you want to debate this, you can, but you're going to be wrong, that Bobby Heenan is, was, and perhaps maybe always will be the best overall performer in the history of the wrestling business. The wrestling, the managing, the commentating, everything that he did, you could say he was absolutely the best at it. And I'm going to hand it over to you, Mick, because we've got someone here that might be able to shed a little bit of light into someone that we absolutely love and adore, and you can't get enough of Bobby the Brain Heenan, or Pretty Boy Bobby Heenan, or whatever you want to call
him. Weasel.
Weasel. You can't get enough of Bobby Heenan. And our guest this week, I mean, you talk about somebody that knows Bobby Heenan. This is the guy.
For the last several years of Bobby's life, I don't think anybody was closer to him outside of his family than the guest that we're going to bring in right now. A longtime friend of mine, a wrestling journalist. He's been a commentator, cartoonist, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, biographer and very close personal friend. Bobby Heenan, our buddy Steve Anderson. Steve, so much to talk about, and we have said, as Chris was saying on this show, there it is.
Do you know somebody that could get this autograph for me?
I think I got a connection. So.
You got you know a guy. Okay.
You know a guy.
Great book, by the way. Great freaking book. Great book.
Steve, I would say from 1970 on, which is, I kind of think when Bobby really was hitting his stride, late 60s into the 70s, there was not a better in-ring performer all around or out of the ring, like Chris was saying, than Bobby Heenan. And very few people had the access to Bobby that you did for so many years, the trials and tribulations. You got to know the man, yeah. You got to know his family, and it's just a kick to have you on board, and lots of stories, lots of memories, and you're the guy to deliver.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. It was quite the journey with Bobby. And when we first, approached the idea of the book, I had heard Bobby in what was a podcast back in the day. And he mentioned something about, I would like to write my autobiography. And I had to jump at that. I mean, that's a story that just writes itself. And so I called Bill Apter. Bill reached out to Bobby. And then we started talking. And with Bobby, it was initially developing trust with him the old school wrestler approach. You have to trust the person you're working with. So he talked and we put together a sample chapter. I sent that back to him. He paid me the greatest compliment he could pay and say, you know, that sounds like me. And then it was find a publisher and we were off to the races. So
fantastic.
Well, I want to get into this. Just kind of let's start at the genesis of everything. Now, your early days, what got you interested in wrestling and specifically the AWA? Was it just location being here in the Twin Cities?
Yeah. Well, it was actually it's a very vivid memory for me because my grandmother, who loved to watch TV, but she saw watching TV as not a solo enterprise. Someone had to be there with her. And so one day I'm over at her house in Minnetonka and she plopped me down in front of the TV and there was the AWA. And it was an episode where Dr. X got his leg broken. I'm forgetting. Ray Stevens. Yep. Broke the leg of Dr. X. And saw that, and I was hooked right there. And started watching, every Sunday morning. It became my routine to watch the AWA. Got my older brother to drive me to the shows and everything. And really, that's how it all started with me. And then from there, you start with the wrestling magazines and, oh, there's a WWF and there's a NWA and that kind of thing. So, but that moment was kind of the genesis of all this for me.
So you mentioned the Ray Stevens, the Dr. X thing, which is, well known maybe at the heyday of the AWA and two of the all-time greats.
Yeah.
But you started to get involved in the business kind of towards the tail end and Eddie Sharkey's PWA, right?
Yeah. It was, Mick had me on his show was very gracious, very kind. And from there, we developed a friendship and I started doing mediocre color commentary on the public access shows. And occasionally I would make a little bit of money. And
what?
Oh, you made money? Wait.
More often than not, I was. Well, oh, look at that.
Look at that. There they go.
Cosby sweater.
Whoa. Hey. Oh, I hope that's where the similarities end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You can't say that.
Good. Okay. We're cool.
But that's what we did. And it was just a whole lot of fun. And I like doing things. If it's not fun, why do it? Just kind of went from there. I still worked for the magazines and transitioned from Pro Wrestling Illustrated to the soon to be defunct WOW magazine, which when that went under, a lot of people were affected. Eddie Sharkey. So that's kind of how it all started. And then after WOW magazine went out of business, that's when I started thinking about kind of the next thing. And that's where kind of the start of my relationship with Bobby started.
Wow. No, you've had an incredibly successful career. You're a cartoonist and a writer for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, as you had talked about. We brought up Bill Apter earlier. I worked with Bill. He came in and did some interviews. We had his own little segment on the AWA.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about Bill Apter. I love the guy. I mean, he deserves to be in every wrestling hall of fame, but just give me your take on Bill.
No doubt. No, Bill is Well, first of all, he does the greatest Jerry Lewis imitation of
he does
of all time. There's no doubt about it. Bill is just a kind man, and his passion for the business, the way he presents himself, to me really doesn't come out. But you know how passionate he is about the business. He's still, in whatever form of media, he's still doing it because he just loves professional wrestling. His taste in hairstyles, you know, not my cup of tea, but other than that, no, Bill is just, he is truly, you're right. Every Hall of Fame needs Bill Apter. And I wouldn't consider it a legitimate Hall of Fame unless they had Bill Apter somewhere in there.
I just want to reference the cartoonist part of it. If you have an opportunity, ladies and gentlemen, to go back and pick yourself up some back issues of Pro Wrestling Illustrated back in the day, Steve's work is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, without a doubt, the premier wrestling cartoonist, right up there with Jerry Lawler. And Steve, I'm sure you would agree with this. Your biggest success as a cartoonist was the Golden Idol dartboard that we promoted on SNR. And I know you're probably still living off of the residuals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I still have a storage locker just filled with those things. Yeah. That went over like a lead balloon, certainly.
Hey, we tried. You know, it's the wrestling business. You see what sticks on the wall.
Yeah, I thought that would work. It didn't quite. And I have the original around somewhere. I do. But that was, wow. Yeah.
So I kind of want to go back to, like, you and Mick and your relationship, because I know that, you know, you had the Pro Wrestling Today and, you know, George's in Fridley. Like, I keep hearing stories about that. Like, what was that like? Because, like, you got into this at that time when kind of the AWA was, you know, on the downslide. But, like, I keep hearing these stories about what happened with the PWA and kind of the environment there.
Well, George's in Fridley was our ECW arena. It had that energy, and there was just something so very special. I remember, you know, seeing the first show and seeing people like Jerry Lynn and there we are, and Sean Waltman. And there was an energy and there was a crowd, just like when you watch an ECW show. You can recognize the people in the front row. George's and Fridley, it was the same way. Mike Frame had his designated spot and everybody else. And to be there particularly when a certain, what was he, 18, 19 years old, Sean Waltman, was phenomenal. And Sean would always, every time I would go up there, Sean would tell me what kind of a ridiculous bump he was going to take that would probably paralyze him forever. And I'm like, Sean, you're good, Sean. But to see that and to see how he overcame that size limitation, and to go to the WWF and then go to WCW. He was a good guy. And the funny thing is he would always call me at work. Because Sean, he never worked. He was a professional wrestler. And he'd call me at work. And I said, Sean, I really gotta get back to work. Oh, God damn it, come on, let's talk. You know, he just wanted to talk about wrestling. That was his whole life. His whole existence, and I think it is still today. And that just being a part of that, just seeing him grow as a professional wrestler and overcome that size limitation during a time when it was all muscle and everything. Just tremendous.
You know, you brought up such a great point, calling it our own ECW arena. Yeah. That is as close to a descriptor. That's perfect. You know, I've explained on this show, I mean, literally, you could reach out and touch the ring from your ringside seat. Yeah. I mean, that's how close everybody was, and they were packed in there. Sean Waltman, Jerry Lynn, and then Eddie would bring in the Mr. Saitos, the Road Warrior Hawks, Brad Ringens, you know, on and on and on. Yeah. And it was like, holy shit, who needs the AWA anymore? We've got this once a month on a Monday.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember Road Warrior Hawk being there. What a character he was. He was funny, and he was just to see him up close and personal, and be willing to, because he just dropped out of the WWF, and then all of a sudden he's a George's and Friendly. That was incredible to see him there and everything.
All right, so I want to fast forward now, because I wanted to get your take on your history and kind of starting and definitely mention, you know, everything that you did with the PWA and Fridley. But now when it comes to your relationship with Bobby Heenan, before you got to actually work with him in terms of being an author, what were your thoughts of Bobby Heenan as a wrestler, as a manager, just overall as a performer, when you were watching him kind of from the outside looking in?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, my grandmother referred to Bobby as that son of a bitch. and I don't know if I can say that here, but I said it.
Yeah, this is no holds barred.
Say whatever the hell you want. I don't give a shit. I'll edit that out later.
But
I won't edit it out.
But yeah, that was, you know, he became this. It's hard to explain for me as I was watching him. You know, he came out. The bumps he would take, the blood, the this and that, and no one. First of all, he could have been a stand-up comedian, no doubt. And I wish he had, if the throat cancer had never happened, he could have really done that. He could have been on a lecture circuit, that kind of thing.
Look at that shot.
Look at that. Right.
that's Bobby taking a double clothesline from the Fabulous Ones. Wow. That was one of the great, that's amazing shot.
Yeah. I mean, he just loved the wrestling business from the time he was a kid. With what I'm doing right now with the podcast, you know, just to listen to him and his enthusiasm, even far after his career had ended, was just phenomenal to hear him talk about. You can see the energy. You know, you can feel the energy from you know, every time he talks about that. When he talks about his mother, it's equally touching. He is just, you know, he's just an overall good guy. He really is. He is the exact opposite of his persona in my dealings with him. And loves his family, loyal, and I there's not enough superlatives for me to tell you what I think about Bobby Heenan. He loved my kids. He did. He referred to my daughter as he wanted my daughter Madison to call him Grandpa Bobby and stuff like that. And my son too. So, I mean, it was that kind of thing. And miss him to this day, seriously. And the podcast itself, it gets a little emotional sometimes for me, because, you know, he is, he's funny and everything, but you just think what could have been, you know, that kind of thing.
So Steve, you know, we had the privilege of seeing Bobby the Brain, Bobby the Weasel Heenan on camera for, fortunately, for decades. And you touched a little bit on what he was like outside of the ring, but can you expand a little bit more? What was, how much did Bobby the Brain Heenan reflect the real life Bobby Heenan?
I think that line, as far as being the angry heel wrestling manager, that wasn't Bobby. Bobby was, to tour with him is, I find it often like taking care of a toddler who just kind of runs in a certain direction and stuff and just starts. He loved to, and not in a mean-spirited way, he loved to mess with people. He would, I remember one time when we were in New York, and there was a woman with this hat that just went on forever. And Bobby rolled down the window and got her attention. And he said, "Madam, that's just a lovely hat," and that kind of thing. He would disappear. You know, we'd be somewhere and it's like, okay, where did he go? And now he's over messing with somebody else. That's just what he did constantly. And, you know, when we went to, you know, the Hall of Fame, that was after, you know, he was diagnosed with cancer right after we submitted the first book to the publisher. And he called me up and he said, you know, "I've been diagnosed with throat cancer." And it's in some of the tapes, in fact, the very first tape, he talks about how he's having trouble. He thinks he has TMJ or something. There's something going on there. But he thought it was something else and that kind of thing. And he called me and he said, "I'm worried how this will affect you." And I said, "Bobby, you need to take care of yourself. You need to get better. You're going to do this. You know, we're going to get through this together. I'll worry about the book. You worry about, you know, what you need to do to get yourself healthy again." That to me underscores the type of man he was.
Everybody that I've worked with in the AWA, I mean, unfortunately, I was only able to meet Bobby once, and that was near the end of his career. Yeah. But everybody from Vern to Greg to Al DeRusha, every single one of them would always talk about how quick and sharp of a wit that Bobby Heenan was, and that if you ever tried to engage in a war of words with him, you were going to lose.
Well, and that's the kind of thing. And I have, you know, like I said, I have all these tapes, and at some point I'm going to start doing weasel one-liners, because some of his one-liners are just incredible. Again, he could have been a stand-up comedian who could talk about anything. His timing was. I would put him up there with the greatest comedians of all time with his timing alone, and his ability to come up with something out of nothing. And you know, I remember the first day we started working on the book. Of course, you know, there was some liquid refreshments there. And I, at the time, I had to have my wife drive me home because Bobby was pouring it, boy. But that really was, you know. But he didn't need that. He didn't need to do that. He was funny sober. He was funny, you know, every kind of way possible. I mean, it really, you know, and to get to know him and to get to know his family. That truly was. And then when WrestleMania came along, he called me a few days before and he asked me if I would do his induction speech. And I'm like, ugh. I said, Bobby, there's got to be somebody, you know, who can do that. And then he found out it had to be a WWE employee. So he had Lanza do it. And but just to be asked, I should back that up a little bit. Then when we were in New York, he said, would it be okay if my daughter did it? And I said, of course, that's fine, because I really did not think I should be doing it. And then they selected Lanza, and that speech, I can't watch that speech. And I don't think anybody here and a true fan of Bobby Heenan could watch that speech without tearing up, because it was his coming out moment after being so very sick. And he was always very self-conscious about how, you know, about his voice and how it had changed and pronunciation and everything, but he still killed it. To this day, there's no one who can match that Hall of Fame speech.
So how were you able to gain the trust? Like, because, you know, the old school wrestlers, it's kind of hard because they have that guard up. Yep. But how were you able to get that communication and then earn the trust and get into that inner circle of Bobby Heenan to be able to get into the position to even write the book or be asked to do the Hall of Fame speech?
Yeah, I'll tell you. For me, it was, and there are a lot of people who write autobiographies who want to put their own spin on it. They want to put, you know, they want to add things. They want to kind of massage things to make it sound more interesting. For me, when we recorded the sample chapter that we had to send to the publisher, I kind of typed up first draft and I looked at it and realized that, no, this is my job is to convey his voice, not mine. And a lot of writers, especially those who write autobiographies, they want to kind of put their own touch on it. They want to do, he shouldn't have said that, or he should have. It was basically, outside of the few cuss words, it was basically transcribing exactly what he said, and without doing that. And then, sent it to Bobby. He said, you know, this really sounds like me, which is, again, a tremendous compliment. Yes. And as far as gaining trust, you're right. There is always kind of a hesitancy, especially with the old school wrestlers who are very protective of the business and their trust levels are hard to overcome. But with Bobby, it was that, and it was just, you know, sitting and talking and talking about our family and you know, what kind of, you know, he just wanted to, you know, find out about me. And so when I gave him that first chapter, you know, he was very happy with it, because I just left it alone. I didn't try to nuance. I didn't try to, you know, get my own take on it. It was his take, and that was how it went for that book, and then the subsequent book too.
Steve, I got a question for you, but just want to share a Bobby Heenan story that to me was one of the all-time greats, and I talked about this on the air before. It's in Chicago, and Nick and Bobby are at the airport, and there's a slew of Japanese wrestling fans. And I think they're journalists, and they wanted their picture taken with Nick, the heavyweight champion of the world. Bobby volunteers to take the picture. And he's clicking away, click, 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 and everybody's smiling. And Bobby says, hey, let's do it again. You move over here. You move over there. And everybody disperses. And Nick says to Bobby, when the hell did you get to be such a nice guy offering to take all these pictures? And Bobby said, nice guy, nothing. He said, I cut off their fucking heads in every picture. So that was very, very typical of Bobby Heenan, who I might add, I will never forgive for accusing me of being Wally Carlbo's illegitimate kid. But
badge of honor.
Badge of honor, yeah, or something.
Yeah.
The question that I have for you, I know that Bobby has been quoted, and I've seen some shoot interviews with him where he talks about the magic in professional wrestling being gone. Once kayfabe was broken, and, you know, here's a guy that literally, I mean, in so many ways gave his life to the business, you know, getting attacked by fans, blading every night, you know, the constant hatred. And I mean, this guy really, if anybody gave everything they had to the business, it was Bobby Heenan. And then all of a sudden, you know, the train leaves the station and kayfabe is broken. Yeah. So when Bobby said the magic is gone, did he ever discuss that with you? And if he did, what was his take on it? Was he upset at this? Was it kind of an acceptance that the business had changed? Just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I think it was more acceptance. Bobby just, you know, his love for the wrestling business, I think, overcame any kind of old school notions that he might have had. He embraced it. I don't think there was, I'm sure it was tough for him because of, you know, I mean, he started in the business at such a young age. And, you know, I just think, yeah, it was more of an acceptance more than a criticism that, you know, the genie is out of the bottle now and you just have to go with it and accept it. I think he was a guy who really, despite his old school approach to the business, I think he still kind of understood because he just wanted to be around it. So I think that was always kind of his goal, just to be around it. So I think he just, and not, you know, he probably didn't, he was slow to transition to that, but I think that he was very accepting. He knew it was changing and he had to change with it, you know, and, or just accept it. This is a guy who just loved the wrestling business. I don't think he was all that concerned. You had to know that it would change, and he just kind of rolled with the punches. I don't think he was necessarily happy about it, but he just accepted it, you know, as long as he was a part of it.
So Mick talked about earlier about how Bobby gave his, to use an old line, his blood, sweat, and tears to the business. He was genuinely in love with the business. And I don't think it's arguable that during his time, Bobby was probably one of the most hated heels in the business. Did he ever talk about fearing for his safety because of the amount of heat that he generated?
There were times, yeah, there were times when an overly zealous fan would come after him, and he expressed that on multiple occasions. I can't think of the specific circumstances, but he was, it was just kind of part of what was happening, you know, part of being in the business, you know. And he, like I said before, he was willing to look at those, not look at those, but to accept kind of the changes. But as far as, you know, fearing for his life, yeah, there were times, I mean, in that era of, say, the 60s and 70s, there were just a lot of fans who were, who had just absolutely bought into it. And he had been, he had some, a few knife wielding fans who got a little too close to him. And, but again, I just think he, it was part of the, and not justifying it in any way, but part of the energy of everything that professional wrestling was to him.
Steve, you know, you talked about the knife wielding fans, let alone that, you know, the shooting incident in Chicago.
Oh yeah, that one. Yes. I mean, yes.
My God, talk about a guy who really is willing to risk life and limb for his craft. It's just extraordinary. Just as a quick aside, because, you know, obviously I'm going to ask this question. The relationship between him and Mr. Bockwinkle, legendary on screen. I know that in Atlanta in 2011, Nick and Bobby were both at a NWA Legends fan convention. And Bobby hadn't arrived yet. And Nick was already starting to get a little bit touched with the memory issues and so on and so forth. But he asked, you know, is Bobby here? Have you seen Bobby? And I said, not yet. And Nick got very teary-eyed out of the blue. And he just said, what a lousy twist of fate that a guy who could make so much money with his words and with his mouth is now going through this issue with the throat cancer. I thought that was very, very poignant. What was their relationship? What did Bobby say about Nick as an overall?
Oh, Bobby would talk about Nick in loving terms, and then he'd talk, he'd kind of just kind of get a dig in every once in a while with Nick. But what I always found interesting about it is that Nick Bockwinkle, of all people, did not need a wrestling manager. He was eloquent, and he was funny, sorry, I lost my train of thought, but he just was able to meld, the two of them were able to kind of meld those talents together of cutting promos and stuff. Because, yeah, I mean, and once, you know, when Bobby left the AWA, you know, Nick could still, you know, be Nick and cut a promo. That's what I found so interesting about it. And as a kid, you know, I didn't see it at the time, but it's like, of all people who don't need a mouthpiece, Nick Bockwinkle, but somehow it just worked.
Very well, I have to add.
Yeah,
I think that's what made it even more impressive is the fact that you put a talker with somebody that can talk.
Yeah.
And the two of them can play off of each other. It's such a different combination.
Oh, exactly.
That it worked. And the guy responsible for that, you know, Vern Gagne, a lot of people have kind of shit on Vern, you know, as we get, you know, later on. But Bobby Heenan, to my knowledge, never spoke a bad word about Vern Gagne, whether, you know, he's working with him or even after, you know, when Vince McMahon kind of started his, you know, his talent buyout of everything. How did Bobby describe the relationship between himself and Vern Gagne?
He never had a bad thing to say about Vern. And I will say as well, as someone who's never met Vern, I think some people use Vern Gagne as just a punching bag of an old man with outdated ideas and stuff like that. I think that's a crock of shit. Vern Gagne had established something that survived probably far, especially after the WWF started growing, far, far longer than other promoters. So those people who, you know, continue to kind of pound on Vern Gagne, I just, you know, what the guy did for the industry, what the guy did for this state, what the guy, you know, that annoys me to absolutely no end. But no, Bobby always had, you know, he had his little digs and stuff, and he had his issues. But, you know, when you know, the WWF came calling, you know, Bobby fulfilled. Vern wasn't happy about it, but Bobby fulfilled all his dates, and that was that. And again, I think, you know, Bobby is an honorable man, and I think Vern Gagne is, you know, no one's perfect, but he's an honorable man who deserves much more respect than he gets. Sorry, I went off on a tangent on that one.
No, that's good.
So, El DeRusha, who I'm one of my dear friends, told me that when Bobby was approached to go to the WWF, that initially Bobby didn't want to do it because he wanted to remain loyal to Vern. Bobby ever talk about that with you?
Yeah, it was really, really a struggle, but the opportunity, to go to New York, he saw the changes in the wrestling business, and of all people to accept it, he did. He understood that, okay, something's happening, something's going on. And he just wanted to be a part of it. And I think if Vern could have matched the money that Bobby was getting, maybe he would have stayed. Probably he would have stayed. But I just think that Bobby's instincts and passion, he saw a grander stage where he could do his thing. I just think it was tough for him. It was a really a difficult decision, but he, like I said, worked all his dates, and then when he was done, he and Vern shook hands, and that was it. And other people weren't so honorable during that time. They just took off. They just left. Bobby, at the very least, said, okay, I'm gonna honor all my commitments, and then I'm gonna leave. And I don't think it was an easy decision for him, but he just, again, instinct. He saw where the business was going, and he needed to follow that.
You know, there's one, I don't even know the proper way to broach this, but there's one individual on this show that we have a really hard time talking about because he's just an absolute scumbag. And we call him the boombox guy.
Okay.
But it seems like there was Bobby Heenan, to my knowledge, was the one who was willing to say, okay, I'll work with him. I'll do what I can to get him over as a babyface. Was that Bobby Heenan's idea to work with?
Are we talking about him?
Yeah, we're talking about him. But I mean, it seems like Bobby was the one that really kind of did. He's the one that put him on the map with the whole feud. I mean, was that Bobby's idea? Did he ever talk about him, or was that just because it's not a big part of AWA history? But I think it's one part that a lot of people in my demographic remember.
Honestly, I think the only time that he referenced that person was when he had just gone to the WWF and he needed the weasel suit. And so he was trying to figure out who had it, and this individual had it. And so Bobby shows up at his house, and it is draped over a chair. And Bobby says something like, well, thanks for having that ready for me. And this individual said, no, it's always been there. So I don't quite know what that means, but it was part of the whole, yeah, there it is. It was part of the whole, I guess, decor of this individual's house, I guess. I don't know. But
I got to ask, sort of interrupt you. Whose idea was the weasel suit? Because arguably, I mean, that's one of the most memorable angles and matches in AWA history. Who came up with the idea for it?
I want to say, and Mick helped me out here, I want to say it was Vern. Was it Vern?
I hadn't heard that it was Vern, but it wouldn't surprise me. Look at that. Look at that tail.
I know. And he would chase it.
He did so good. Like Bobby Heenan in the weasel suit. I think about it now and I just start giggling because of just how over he got that weasel suit and how people love to see. Yeah, he was literally chasing his tail.
You know what was fun about it? You know, when you take your dog to the vet or you take your cat to the vet and they put the pet under to perform surgery. This is kind of what they did with Bobby Heenan. Greg would have to put him in the sleeper as the anesthetic. And then Bobby woke up and by God, he had a grooming. He had his weasels. And of course he's tearing at the arms and he's chasing the tail and looking at the claws and everything. Absolutely a brilliant, brilliant performance. And the thing of it is when you watch this in retrospect and you know, these guys are, they're doing this to make money. And Bobby knew that every time he complained about this or said, don't chant weasel at me or whatever, it meant more box office.
Oh, he completely embraced that. He completely embraced
it. Did he love putting the weasel head?
What to me it was his head turn. That always got the crowd going. All he had to do was do that.
Absolutely.
That was it.
Yeah, did he like putting the weasel suit on? I mean, did he enjoy being in that? Because
he could take it or leave it. I think.
Okay.
He understood the purpose of it, but it was just something that it ran its course, and that was that. So
I
have a question for you, Steve, about Bobby the later years when. The misfortune was setting in, and I know you've alluded to, your initial conversations with him when he told you what was going on. So I kind of got a two-part question here. First of all, that's one hell of a blow to be dealt with. Not only, just the diagnosis that you have this, but the surgeries that Bobby endured, and then losing the ability to speak and communicating, with those who knew him best and could understand him. He did not seem to be overly depressed about this. This is kind of where I'm going with this. There's a picture of Bobby and Paul Ellering. Was Bobby philosophical about this? And also the amazing thing to me, you put a picture of Bobby Heenan up in later years on Facebook and somebody, oh my God, poor Bobby Heenan. But Bobby was out there. He was going to the fan fests. He was going to the conventions. He was mingling with the fans that gave him shit all those years. Talk about a courageous individual.
He didn't let that stop him at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just something that he just wanted to be a part of it, no matter what. And what I remember about those was the persistent middle finger he'd raise.
Oh,
that kind of replaced his speech. That's how he expressed himself. And Steve, I see, people will post videos of, hey, I got to see Bobby Heenan, and there's that prominent middle finger that comes up. But he had Cindy with him, and so that was a tremendous, tremendous. She was, those two were just what a great couple, certainly, and especially a marriage that could survive the wrestling business. That was tough. And that was just, of all people to lose their ability to speak, to not be able to, talk or cut a promo or anything like that. But as always, he made the best of it, and he was still Bobby Heenan. He just wasn't talking. So He adapted, and that's I think that's something that defines his career as well. He was always willing to adapt.
Before we put over the, and I know Chris wanted to do this, put over your Weasel Tales podcast.
Yeah.
You mentioned Bobby in the middle finger, and we've got a final picture that we're going to put up, which I think is really apropos. But at Cauliflower Alley, the last time I saw Bobby, I believe, he was there. He was in the wheelchair, and Cindy was right by him, and they introduced Bobby to the crowd, and they gave Bobby a standing ovation. I mean, everybody in the place, teary-eyed and cheers and everything else, and Bobby's response, of course, was to like stand up halfway out of the wheelchair and like flip off the entire room, you know, just in unison. And that I think was Bobby's way of saying yeah, thank you, everybody. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was his way of showing his love, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. It was funny.
Great moment.
Yeah.
Just wanted to bring myself back in here. So now that you've told us the stories, when you told me that you were going to come up with a podcast that was going to be about Bobby Heenan,
yeah,
I loved it. I it's a great idea because everybody loves Bobby Heenan. Put over Weasel Tales, because if you are not subscribed, if you're not listening to this podcast, then you're not a wrestling fan. Yeah. So tell us all about Weasel Tales, because you've got the goods on the best of all time in Bobby Heenan.
Yeah. Well, when we first, in fact, I'll this is what we use. This is an antique now that sells for like hundreds of dollars on eBay. So when I first got the idea, because I have all these little micro tapes, and so when I first got the idea to do it, I had to kind of do my own way of transferring the video to, or not the video, but the audio to off the tapes to some form of digital gimmick. And so I started doing that, and was able to kind of transition those tapes. And then I used Buzzsprout, and they kind of helped clean up the tapes as well. But when I started doing it, it was me talking, and then I would do a little snippet of something Bobby said. And after about, I don't know, 5 podcasts, I thought, what am I doing? People don't want to hear me. They want to hear Bobby. And so that's how I started doing it. And it was, like I said, it was an emotional experience to kind of hear him. Initially, it was. It was like I'm hearing his voice now and remembering, you know, everything about it. And so Weasel Tales is a tribute to Bobby Heenan. His voice lives on in that. In the when we did the second book, Chair Shots, that's where his voice was. He was cancer free at that point, but that's where his voice was just a little bit different. But still, I realize that this is what fans want to see. They want to hear Bobby Heenan be Bobby Heenan. And it was, the experience was, for me, it was laughing all the time. Again, drinking copious amounts of alcohol. but it was just, it really brought back those memories for me. And it's really, and I remember when I first had the idea, I reached out. It was not long after his wife had passed, and I reached out to his daughter Jessica, and because she was thinking about maybe a movie script or something. So we were just talking back and forth, and I said, you know, would it be okay if I did this? I at least wanted some type of permission, validation from a family member. And she said, go ahead. And it's been phenomenal to find out all the people who just absolutely love Bobby. Can't get enough of, you know, Bobby. And so, yeah, those tapes are well taken care of. And eventually, you know, I'm gonna run out of tape, and I'm toying with the idea of live podcasts. I tried to do one a few weeks ago, and it was a bit of a disaster. But I think that's the way going forward, and to maybe, you know, have Bobby's words, but kind of give context to it. There it is.
Oh, look at that, boy! Yeah. There's Bobby speaking for the rest of us.
Exactly. Exactly. So
I was so honored to meet him at that time. I've said many times, I don't mark out anymore. Yeah. You know, I've been around the business for a long time. I marked out when I met Bobby the Brain Heenan.
The first day we were writing the book, I'm having this out-of-body experience. Like, look at what you're doing here. You know, look who you're talking to. You know, I mean, it was, and again, the book wrote itself. He just talks and talks and talks, and then to have the tapes, and be able to maybe get another generation of Bobby Heenan fans, you know, who maybe knew of him and that kind of thing. But
and I think, Steve, I don't know if this was foresight on your part, but when you have those interviews, you have that. Did you have the foresight to save it to make sure? Or was this just a, because sometimes you record something and then the tendency is to record over it, or you lose it, or, you know, now that you didn't need it, you kind of just discard it.
No, for me, they were always like keepsakes. I kept them, you know, and because they meant so much to me. And then podcasting became the rage and all that, and decided, okay, let's bring this out in the world. And there are some things, like Bobby was very careful. He one of the rules was initially and throughout the whole process was, I don't want to say anything that will end a marriage, ruin someone's life, and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of times on the tapes where he say, turn off the tape recorder. And he tell these tremendous stories. I mean, but they were not for public consumption at all. But he was very, very careful about that. That he didn't want to, you know, upset anybody or ruin lives, because he just, you know, thought that. But yeah, I kept the tapes and didn't know back then, you know, 2004, 2005, didn't know back then that they would have any value or purpose, but now they do. So,
Steve, before we let you go, first of all, I'm reminded here as we're sitting here of another Bobby Heenan line. You know, yeah. they just come to you. Bobby at one time was cutting a promo on television, and he said, I had the worst experience on a flight to Omaha, you know. And the announcer says, my God, what happened? And Bobby said, well, the plane landed safely in Omaha. And so that said it all right there. Steve, I can't thank you enough. And I know Chris and Joe, oh, look at that. Talk about your out-of-body experience. Yeah. Greatest experience of my announcing career. Calling one match with Bobby Heenan. That's all it took. And, back to what I was saying about you. You're a longtime friend, and you're a gifted writer. The books that you put together about Bobby Heenan are spectacular. The fact that Bobby let you into the inner circle not only speaks volumes about Bobby as a person, but it speaks to you as an individual. Yeah. You're nothing but a professional, and this has been just great, giving us all the insight to Bobby Heenan.
And I will express that to you guys as well. I could talk about Bobby Heenan all day, and Lord knows I probably have. But I do appreciate it, and if you ever want me on again, I am at the ready.
Oh, I think that has to be a must.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad, because we had kind of discussed that we were going to get you on, and then we kind of had to move some things around. Yes, sir. So I'm glad that we were able to get you on, because I feel like the admiration that our audience has, and I feel like the wrestling fans overall, Bobby Heenan, I feel even posthumously, unfortunately, has become so much more revered now. Oh. And I feel like it's a shame that he can't see it, or he's not able to experience it, because I feel like fans have just got this love for Bobby Heenan now that I wish that he could have really embraced. Or did he feel that? Did he feel like the fans were really starting to embrace him? I guess as we're kind of wrapping up.
I think he was, when we first started doing the book tours and stuff, I think Bobby was wondering, okay, who's gonna remember me and that kind of thing. And I think with the timing of the second book and the WWF putting him into the Hall of Fame, I mean, those two things came together at the same time. So they were a tremendous partner in all of this. And of course, and his speech again was when Bobby became Bobby, according to his wife. And that's true. And I saw it as well. And to end it with, I wish Monsoon was here. If you don't shed a tear, you are a robot, because that just got me and everybody. But he stole the show. And there were other Hall of Fame inductees that were not happy with the fact that Bobby Heenan outshined them. There were a few of them that's like, they wanted to remember. Yeah, Gorilla Monsoon. That is always something. In fact, I have I really struggled with one of the tapes when he was talking about Gorilla. And he would get emotional and he would say, excuse me. And I really wrestled with it. I thought, do I want to put, it wasn't like a crying fit, but he was getting very emotional. And I thought, I think I need to put this in there, because it needs to be known how much he loved Gorilla and how devastated he was when he passed away.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Steve. And Mick, I'll let you kind of wrap it up with him then, because your relationship, man, this is fantastic. This has been an absolute blast.
Yeah, I do want to say something about Mick. We've certainly had our ups and downs, but him making me Ringsider of the Week and introducing me to the wrestling business and all that stuff. We may not hang out a lot. We may not see each other as much as we used to, but I love you, Mick. You've done so much for me, and I think a lot of my success started with those appearances on SNR, and I miss that show. I really do. I think we need that back, but that's just me.
I appreciate it, my friend, and again, kudos to you. I mean, not only for all your accomplishments in the business, but in particular, bringing Bobby Heenan, the man, the real person, to the forefront for everybody. You did an extraordinary job, and we'll have you on again. We're only scratching the surface.
Sounds good. I'm ready to go whenever you need me.
Excellent. Okay. With that, everybody, I get emotional just hearing the Bobby Heenan stories. And again, for me, that one time when Bobby came in for a Steel Domain show and I said, Bobby, would you mind sitting in on one? Oh, sure. And I was just like, oh, good God.
Well, I think that shows the respect that he had for you, Mick, though, to tell you, yes, that he would do that.
Well, it was surreal, and it was the experience of a lifetime. And he was Bobby Heenan on commentary. I mean, he was, you know, he interfered in the match, and he was, you know, your typical Bobby Heenan, but a great, great experience. And in closing, you know, Chris and Joe, we talked about what would be an appropriate photograph to put up of Bobby Heenan as we conclude the show and thank not only Steve Anderson for his excellent work, but also Bobby Heenan himself. And what could be a more appropriate photograph than this one right here?